It is my distinct honor and privilege tonight to welcome Major General Ben Watson, the Commanding General of 1st Marine Division. Ben, and if you want to read his bio, it's in here, okay? There you go.
All right, hey, thanks very much. Can you hear me in the back okay? All right. General Schrody, thanks for that exceptionally warm introduction. Yeah, this is great. I knew this was going to be a great night when it started out with, like, boy, really, just kind of sucks General Gehring couldn't be here. And, but that's okay. We got, what's his name, right? What's your name? Yeah, great, sir. I appreciate it. No, thanks very much. For your sake, not mine, I won't read them verbatim, but I'm going to use some remarks here. Otherwise, we might have a kind of German's Pearl Harbor moment, and I could talk about the Blue Diamond for a long time. As those of you here from the Blue, how many folks here from the Blue Diamond? Good. Must be fit rep time. Yeah. Okay. The problem for me that creates is that nothing ruins a good story like an eyewitness, so I'll have to cage my remarks appropriately. But, hey, look, I appreciate it, and General Schrody, thanks very much. Thanks, really, for doing exactly what Leanne tells you to do up here at these things. Thanks for having us and allowing me to represent, and this is kind of, my being here is kind of what we in OneMef like to call delegation. General Gehring does send his regards, talk to him a couple times a day, and he really, I mean, he's actually, he would love to be here, but he's in a tough spot right now. They start Keen Edge tomorrow, big multinational exercise, and his change of command is in 2 weeks. So got quite a bit going on. So I would have been here regardless, big fan and supporter of the association. So, I got the best general officer job in the Marine Corps. It's not even close. So I'm lucky enough, to lead really the oldest, the largest, and most decorated unit in the Marine Corps, 1st Marine Division, which is a ground combat element of OneMef. So on behalf of the 20, more than, 20,000 Marines and sailors in the 1st Marine Division, and really by extension, the more than 40,000 Marines and sailors in the 1 Marine Expeditionary Force, thanks for being here. Thanks to all my battle buddies that are here in the general officer ranks for taking time to be here as well. I'd be remiss if I didn't. I won't overdo it because General Schrody kind of already hit the pitch. But thank our industry veterans that are here tonight. Helping us kind of keep pace with the adversary and identify the equipment, the systems that give us warfighting advantage, and just making sure, as always, that we never have to send our Marines and sailors into a fair fight. So the fact that you continue to serve, continue to support us, continue to support organizations like the association here, thank you. I appreciate it. I know we got a healthy dose of folks out there. And thanks. General Schrody, you pretty well covered what Marine Corps Association Foundation does. But, I have been a member since I was ordered to become one as a lieutenant. And have not been properly relieved, so I'm. But the association really important. Doesn't just commit kind of to our individual and collective professional development in tangible ways that help us, I think, improve our warfighting edge, but is really kind of a repository of our culture, of that unique DNA that makes the Marine Corps, I think, truly different from anybody else. Those intangibles, and so thanks, sir, to you and Leanne and the whole team here and. Still throw a pretty decent dinner party, so I appreciate the opportunity to be here. So, hey, what are our Marines up to today? I'd first say that it's a pretty exciting time to be a Marine. There's kind of an intellectual buzz around the Marine Corps that I have not seen since I was a young lieutenant more than 30 years ago. And the catalyst for the conversation back then was the release of FMFM1. Which is a little white book that changed the way Marines looked at war, how to prepare for war, and how to fight and win. And I can remember as a young lieutenant, and then as an instructor at the basic school and the infantry officer course, getting into these kind of knockdown, drag-out fights about what this whole maneuver warfare thing was, how to apply it, and what it meant for the future of our service. What were the tactics, the techniques, procedures, and investment decisions associated with it? And did strange terms like main effort, commander's intent, mission type orders, and center of gravity even make sense? And was this right for the Marine Corps? It was messy, it was controversial, but it proved essential to the Marine Corps' ability to adapt to a changing world. And since then, it's not only become mainstream Marine Corps doctrine, it's been republished and studied and emulated by other services, other nations, and the international business community. And I would suggest to you that today's equivalent of that maneuvered warfare debate that generated such controversy more than 30 years ago is force design. You know, the name originally included the year 2030, but our objective, it's not fixed in time. It's kind of a 10-year sliding scale in terms of a horizon. And so that's kind of how we look at warfighting and capability development. So I think we're kind of dropping the 2030 and just calling it Marine Corps Force Design or Marine Corps Modernization. And that, to me, makes a lot of sense. And it's been a fascinating journey so far. As everyone knows, there are some vibrant discussions, in some cases, some pretty emotional critiques of the direction that the Marine Corps is moving, just like there were back in the late 80s and the early 90s. And I would argue that that dialogue's healthy. The only thing we can't do in the face of adversaries who are thinking, investing, and evolving quickly is to remain static. To count on the idea that what we had and what we did in the last fight will be sufficient to ensure we have overmatch and victory in the next fight. Historically, militaries that remain static eventually lose, and we cannot afford to have to lose to learn. We got to learn from each other's mistakes to keep pace with the evolving character of conflict. And what we're seeing today in places that you can see all over YouTube and you know the daily news, places like Ukraine and Yemen and Armenia and Azerbaijan and now Gaza, all suggest that the character war is changing. So we're in this kind of fascinating, messy, almost an interwar period right now as we explore these new concepts and experiment with new capabilities and technologies in areas like unmanned systems, long-range precision fires, joint combined, all-domain command and control, signature management, and artificial intelligence. And we're working hard. We're working hard to become more interoperable with our naval and joint partners, as well as our overseas allies and partners. And all that stuff that I'm talking about, that's not just going on in Quantico and the Pentagon. We're doing all that right here in OneMEF. And over the past 3 years, we have significantly enhanced our interoperability and our partnership with the Navy, especially 3rd Fleet and Expeditionary Strike Group 3 here in San Diego. I know Randy Peck got a call out earlier. Where are you, Randy? Randy and his deputy Kevin Norton are here tonight. I mean, they're voting with their time. That matters. We're working on ensuring if we have to fight a naval campaign in the maritime littorals, whether it's in the Western Pacific or anywhere else on the globe, that the Navy Marine Corps team is trained for naval combat and that we're ready to fight it together. Do we have it exactly right? Hell no. You know, of course not. Not yet. You know, what Yogi Berra said, you know, tough to make predictions, especially about the future, right? He was, you know, I'd say he's got it about right. We're almost in like an institutional movement to contact of sorts. We got a good sense of where our future adversaries are, and we're fighting like hell for information and to gain and maintain advantage in the tactics, the techniques, and technologies that'll ensure that the Navy Marine Corps team is ready to win that next fight. The work we're doing now, it's all about the ability to maintain warfighting advantage in an increasingly contested multi-domain environment in which the only thing we may know is that we will not fight alone. We got to keep pace with, if not outpace, our most dangerous future threats, those peer-level adversaries that are themselves investing and evolving rapidly to gain for themselves that same competitive advantage against the old US of A. So all that said about the aim point and what we're striving for, out here in OneMEF and 1st Marine Division, we do have Marines and sailors in harm's way today. And we must still be ready to fight tonight. So although we're experimenting with an eye towards the future, we're still running that West Coast offense that you're all very familiar with. We're still a force that's fundamentally grounded in MAGTAF combined arms warfighting across the spectrum of conflict. And we remain ready to respond to crises globally across the range of military operations. But again, we're working more closely than ever with our Navy and Joint Force teammates. We're upgrading and refining our playbook based on that aggressive campaign of learning, and we're determined to ensure that we remain the most lethal and capable force on the battlefield, wherever that battlefield may be. I think one of the most important questions that we ask ourselves in 1st Marine Division is, what does combined arms look like in the 21st century? This is a time unlike any we've faced in decades, where even at the small unit tactical level, we got to fight in the traditional domains like air, land, and sea. But now, even at the tactical level, even at the small unit level, we've got to be prepared to fight in new domains like cyber, space, and the electromagnetic spectrum. What does that look like? Because we'll likely not have overmatch and certainly not supremacy in any one of those domains like we've become accustomed to over the last few decades. In today's world, we ask ourselves, how do we gain warfighting advantage at echelon, from bottom to top, against a peer or a near-peer adversary? That's where we're applying our intellectual energy in the 1st Marine Division and in 1MEF. You should know that we're still busy. And you should know that our increased focus on the Western Pacific doesn't mean we aren't paying attention to what else is going on in the world in the Middle East, just like we're keeping a weather eye on what's happening in Europe. But right now, if you're in the 1st Marine Division, you're either deployed, you're preparing to deploy, or you just got back from deployment. About 20 to 25% of the division, about 3 to 4 of our reinforced infantry battalions are deployed at any one time. The Sergeant Major and I have spent, what, 5 of the last 10 days or so at Bridgeport and 29 Palms. And so you should know that we have the best equipped and the most lethal infantry and small unit combined arms teams that I have ever seen. That hasn't changed. But as we balance our enduring requirements to continue to source these reinforced battalion-sized units around the globe, and as we watch the rise of peer-level adversaries, we're also focused more than ever on the ability to fight the division. And to that end, we've deployed the division headquarters 3 times in the past year to work on fighting the division in different constructs, under different headquarters. So first, you know, going back to basics, right? Fighting is a MEF. Fighting is the ground combat element of a MEF. Last spring, we deployed the division headquarters to South Korea. We're heading there again in a few weeks. Went there for about a month and participated in large-scale amphibious combined joint forcible entry warfighting exercise in the context of war on the peninsula. So fully integrated U.S. 1st Marine Division and ROC 1st Marine Division fighting underneath 3MEF, the plug-and-play MAGTAF kind of a construct. You know, you can put pieces together and build Mr. Potato Head from any number of combinations. It was a scenario that we fought in cold weather, involving chemical weapons, mine warfare, humanitarian considerations. It doesn't get much more challenging. So training to fight as a ground combat element of a MEF level MAGTAF. Last summer, we then deployed the division to Australia. Northeast Australia is part of a multinational combined joint task force. We fought underneath the U.S. Army's 1st Corps, adjacent to the 1st Australian Division, and combined task group 76-3 out of 7th Fleet in Japan. And after landing in Australia, we used a combination of surface connectors and both Marine and Coalition aviation assets to further project combat power over 1,000 nautical miles to conduct integrated sea denial operations. Different construct. And in November, you know, we deploy the division every year across the southwestern United States. This year we operated first as a naval task group, fully integrated with Expeditionary Strike Group 3, and then we scaled up to fill the role of a MEF forward headquarters, pacing with escalation as the conflict developed. And then from there, we became the ground combat element of a JTF, serving as a JFLIC underneath the 1MEF JTF in the Philippines. Some of you know this exercise is Steel Knight. It used to look a lot different. Still runs between Thanksgiving and Christmas, but it used to be an annual combined arms exercise that essentially focused on combined arms warfighting in the desert. 30 years later, it's 1MEF and 3rd Fleet. It's a combined arms naval warfighting exercise designed to prepare the entire West Coast offense, that amphibious team, to conduct amphibious and expeditionary operations in a contested maritime environment. It builds from low end to high end. So like, life's not all roses, right? I mean, we've got challenges, and those of you here that are serving today, and those of you here that have previously served and are today serving in other capacities can probably nail, you know, a lot of these challenges. Logistics and littoral maneuver, probably at the top of the list, something that Andy Niebel and First Marine Logistics Group are working hard on every day, and we're working with them. Command and control. Command and control is tough enough as it is, but in a joint coalition environment, pretty hard. Exercises like Steel Knight and others, we're getting after a lot of those challenging command and control constructs. We're blending today. I mean, it has to be a blend of government and commercial solutions to get us to the common operational picture that allows us to make sense and to target. Third MAW is doing some really innovative work. I don't know if BAM's made it here tonight, but Third MAW is doing some really innovative work around evolving organizations like the MAOC, the Multifunctional Air Operations Center, that's a big contributor to our ability to kind of put together the kind of command control construct at echelon that allows us to seamlessly integrate into a joint coalition environment. We're getting there. Amphibious ship capacity and readiness, it's not where we need it. That's no secret. It's not where we need it so that we can be there for America when she needs us. So we're investing in other things, right? We're investing in small boats, non-traditional connectors. We're working with allied and partner and commercial capabilities to try to ensure that we have a menu of options available to us when we need to get somewhere quickly. Just last summer, we embarked a rifle company out of 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines, MRFD, a rifle company and an MV-22 detachment on the Australian ship Canberra. Deployed from Darwin, Australia, all the way up to the Philippines and conducted amphibious expeditionary operations. It's a time for creative solutions. But every challenge, right, there's opportunity. And every element of the 1MEF MAGTAF is seizing it. We're working closely with the Marine Corps Warfighting Lab on service level experimentation in areas like future infantry battalion design, multi-domain reconnaissance, signature management, long-range precision fires with a bias towards sea denial, all domain command and control, and unmanned systems integration. We just invested 10 officers in division schools, including a post command lieutenant colonel, to supercharge that organization to get after UAS employment, counter UAS, and signature management. Got to make the investment now. Through all this, through this kind of tumultuous but exciting period of adaptation, evolution, and learning, through all this, I would tell you, though, our priority remains where it's always been, and that's our people. Today's Marines are smart. I mean, you know, we are the only service that's still making mission, but it's a close-run thing. Manpower's tight. But our people, the people that we're getting, they're smart, they're tough, and they're ready. And the 1st Marine Division and 1MEF remain ready to rapidly deploy anywhere in the globe that we need to. We will not lose a focus on our baseline requirement, which is to be ready at the drop of a dime if the nation needs us to fight tonight. We'll train hard every day to ensure that under any circumstances, we can still seize and hold key maritime terrain. Foundational skill. We can fight and win in any climate place, regardless of the adversary. And we still live by the division motto of no better friend, no worse enemy. But what we will not do is be complacent. We will not remain static. Because as a service, we cannot afford to lose in order to learn. So thanks very much for the invitation to join you tonight. I look forward to talking to as many of you as are willing to stick around afterwards. Appreciate your support of the Marine Corps Association. And again, particularly to those of you in the 1st Marine Division, but to all of you, thanks for what you do. It's an honor to serve with you. Semper Fidelis.